Yeah, I'm like Neo now.
Oh, that was good. That was good.
That's Morpheus.
Good morning, everyone. Jurassic Views, Ottawa's Raptors podcast. Bryce Diamond, feeling good. Feeling good. We're just over a week, I guess a week and a half, since the Canadian men's basketball team won the bronze medal game. And today, our show, our episode, will focus mostly around Zaya Quiena. He will give his thoughts in a new location. Our guy has an announcement. No, Kevin Durant did not get traded from Phoenix, and he is not in Phoenix as part of the trade package that he offered when Kevin Durant was in Brooklyn. No, that did not happen. But he does have an announcement, a new location that he wants to tell you about. And, of course, talk to you about this Canadian basketball team. So very exciting, very exciting. Before that, I wanted to give my thoughts, but also give you a heads up that over the next week, we'll be talking more Canadian basketball. We'll be talking Olympic basketball. Of course, the Olympics happen next year in Paris, 2024. And there's all kinds of chatter about this World Cup, what the Olympics looks like. Of course, the U.S. media is sensationalizing things, as they love to do. They're asking, is this, you know, Redeem Team 2.0 coming? Is USA basketball, or is American basketball in general, in a state of crises? it is hilarious to listen to. So we're going to talk about Canada basketball. We have a couple guests coming on the show. Hopefully the return of Courtney Wright, if her bosses allow her to get back on the show. Obviously, we'd love to have a co-host of Jurassic Views on. Knowing that Zaya has just got on, it'd be great to also have Courtney. But one of our guests next week had the opportunity to go to Indonesia and see the first round of play, which is pretty awesome opportunity. Young guy from Ottawa, which is also a lot of fun when we can connect with an Ottawa-based media person, but more importantly, an Ottawa-based hoop head. So Alex Adams will be joining us. He did the We Can series on Raptors Republic, their podcast known as the Rapcast. I've obviously talked about it on the pod with Zaya many, many times. But Alex, I don't think had ever been on the Rapcast before he knew that he was going to Indonesia. So we're going to get a chance to talk to him about that opportunity with Raptors Republic, obviously the trip to Indonesia, and just things that he got to do, people he got to meet, and of course, talk about Canada basketball and what they've accomplished. Before we get there, I just wanted to talk briefly about some of the things that Canada achieved. I don't know if Zaya got to all of these. Zaya was more narrative-based than kind of straight stats and facts. So I hope you listen to that, because there's some great stuff in there, including talking about giving Jordy Fernandez a Nexus Line type runway to Canadian citizenship, which is cool. But listen, Canada has never, the men's team has never medaled at a World Cup before. This is the first time. That is huge. This is also the first time since 1936 that the Canadians have won a medal. When the sport debuted at the Olympics. And that was also the only tournament that Canada beat the United States at the senior level. Obviously, under, you know, in more the amateur or younger age groups, we know that Canada has beat them both in the men's and the women's. But this is the first time since 1936 at the senior level that Canada has beaten the United States of America in basketball. Massive, massive achievement. The women won a bronze at the World Cup in 1986 and in 1979, but they've never won an Olympic medal. So this is a pretty huge achievement, knowing that the women are ranked fifth going into their World Cup, and the men are ranked sixth now after the World Cup. I think we were ranked 12th going into this World Cup. So we've jumped a number of teams. I think Serbia, Germany, the U.S., Spain are all ahead of us. I don't know where Australia fit in. They're probably right there. And maybe Lithuania is on the cusp. I'll have to look at those rankings. But to be sixth and fifth in the world at the men's and women's senior levels is unbelievable. What a time to be witnessing Canada basketball. There's all kinds of articles being written about them at major publications in Canada. Even Americans on their podcasts are talking about this Canadian team. You know, when Dylan Brooks drops 39 and plays like Kobe, that's going to happen. When Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is arguably the best player in the tournament, of course, the MVP was given to Schroeder, whose team Germany won the gold medal, which makes sense. But there's lots of talk that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was the best player in this tournament. It is just amazing to be first team All-NBA and then be considered the best player at an international tournament, knowing that, you know, there were three All-Stars on the American team, knowing that Luka Doncic was there and he outplayed Luka. Obviously, Bogdanović was awesome, but not as good as Shai in Bogdanović's play for Serbia. And we know Dennis Schroeder was the best player for Germany. He led that team. But he did have, you know, some games where he didn't have to perform at a high level. And his numbers don't show the same impact as Shai's did. I mean, let's be honest. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander averaged 24.5 points a game. He turned over the ball 1.4 times a game, which is just ridiculous. 6.4 assist to turnover ratio. I mean, that's right up there with the very best in the NBA. I think Monte Morris had a 5-1 turnover assist to turnover ratio. He's right there with Monte Morris's numbers. And Monte Morris wasn't a starter for most of last season playing for the Washington Wizards. So Shai was doing this in incredibly intense physical games at the international level. So that's pretty huge. He led the team in points, assists, and get this, rebounds. He also had 6.4 rebounds a game. Dwight Powell, who I know didn't play the same amount of minutes as Shai, had 4.4 rebounds, 5 for RJ Barrett, 4.6 for Olenek. So for Shai to be the leading rebounder, the leading assist guy, and the leading points person on his team, all three categories, his, I think he was second in points in the tournament to Luka in averages, just a wonderful, wonderful tournament from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Wow. Impressive stuff for first-team All-NBA guy. And he's only 24 years old. Like, this dude is only going to get better. So that's great to see. But this team, you know, has really been honored, put in the spotlight, cherished, celebrated the last week and a half. And it's been incredible. Just incredible. You know, I said it was a week and a half ago. A week and a half ago is when they actually beat Spain to qualify the Olympics. They just won, you know, on Sunday against the USA, not even a week ago. Man, time is all warped right now for me. Maybe that's because my daughter's back in school. Maybe that's because the weather in September has been up and down. There, you know, it's kind of playing between fall and summer right now. Regardless, this Canadian team, bronze medalists, history being made, getting back to the Olympics for the first time in 24 years. And now they get to prepare, right? And the question that a lot of people are already asking, that we'll ask with hopefully my friend Brandon on the show next week, the big Celtics fan at Truro, Nova Scotia, lives here in Ottawa in the same neighborhood I do. We're going to talk about probably what they achieve, but also who is on that team next year and who will they be facing? And there's a lot of roster conversations, right? Obviously, Jokic wasn't at the tournament for Serbia. They'll be better. Giannis Antetokounmpo hasn't qualified for the Olympics. He likely will be on that Greek team trying to qualify next year, early July, before the Olympics happens. Of course, the USA have all kinds of questions around who will be on their team. We've heard about Steph, KD, LeBron, all wanting to play on next year's team to get gold again, like they did in 2021 and probably like the previous, what, like four Olympics before that. I think it's only been one Olympics that they haven't won the gold since the Dream Team, and that was in 2004 when a very young LeBron James, D-Wade, Carmelo Anthony lost in the 2004 Athens Olympics. Since then, they've been winning gold. And they, you know, most years have not put a full A team out there. And they did not this year. It was like a C team. They only had three All-Stars. You know. So we'll Brandon and I will talk about that. And we'll also talk about the Canadian team. They didn't put their best team out there. We obviously know Jamal Murray. And we'll talk about some people's thoughts about Jamal Murray not getting there. We'll talk about Andrew Wiggins. Question marks around his mental health. And, you know, will he be ready next year? But there's other guys. Brandon Clark, of course, had a major injury. And can he come back? Because we need a better rim protector. Some of the young guys who play for Indiana, like Benedict Mathurin and Andrew Memhard, will they be there? Or Sheldon Sharp, maybe. For the Portland Trailblazers. So lots and lots to talk about with Brandon, with Alex Adams and Courtney, but these episodes are coming up. Very exciting time, and you will hear more about that excitement, about how huge a moment it is and how amazing the coaching staff was as well, led by, of course, Sacramento Kings assistant coach, former assistant coach of the Spanish national team, Jordi Fernandez, and through Zaya Quiena's, his take and his ode to this team. So hope you enjoy that. He has quite an essay that he gets into on the pod, and it's good to have him back on. It was great to hear his voice and just make sure the recording was great, but also just hear his takes. I love, you know, spending time talking with Zaya about hoops and in this case, a really extraordinary time to be a Canadian basketball fan, to have our first medal for the men since 1936. All right, y'all. I'll let you listen to Z and we'll catch up to you soon. Peace.
This is Zaya here, your foreign correspondent reporting from Lagos, Nigeria. I'm coming to you at 10:35 in the evening here. Still riding the waves of excitement, the great tides off the beaches of the Philippines. And yes, I'm referring to the win by the Canada men's national team over the United States. just for bronze. Yes, we weren't in the gold medal game, but that didn't matter for the FIBA World Cup. But I am still enthralled by the growth of the program and the excitement. And like many, I had to stay up late and or wake up early in my case and catch the game. Not like some of you in North America, but nevertheless, I was along with many cheering our boys on, and I am still just now even imagining what our team can be next summer in Paris for the Olympics. And in the last couple of days, I've been able to, gather my thoughts and reflect on the win, but more so even reflect deeply on two things. One, the complete global shift and of basketball, where we are now, and also the state of basketball in Canada, in our national programs, both women and men, and then for this case, men, because I feel like we have had our straight failures. We've had to reinvent ourselves, and this summer has really been an opportunity to shine the spotlight on how we have had to pivot in light of so many changes, both on a macro and on a micro level. Macro level, just the way the way basketball is going, I feel like the men's program has had to change the style of play and adopt more of a European style rather than the, kind of an American style of which is really generated by the NBA. And then on a micro level, literally there's had to be a coaching change, right? From Nick Nurse to Jordy Fernandez, which is not easy. And as you can tell, actually Jordy maintained a lot of the assistant coaches from Nick Nurse, which I thought was a genius move. I think along with Warren Barrett, the GM, I think that was smart to bring some level of continuity. But beyond just the logistics, let's just take a step back. I think it's been covered by Bryce in the latest episode of the pod. Thanks for holding it down. Thanks, B. Thanks, Courtney, for holding it down. I think I haven't voiced my opinions on the pod for a while, just based on some life changes, which I'll go into more details later. But I'm just going to at least just start us off with just my thoughts on the Canada win over the U.S. And I think I'm going to just primarily like give a quick shout out to Dylan Brooks, Shay, SGA, the Olniks, the RJ Barretts, these guys who've been committed to the program from, I believe many of them in their mid-teens, and I've seen it grow and I've seen it evolved. They've been part of the, Venezuela embarrassment losses and the highs and lows, and they've been now part of the victories, right? Beating Spain to qualify for the Olympics, right? And so I think even that was that, you would think that would suffice in terms of achievement, making it to the Olympics. Since what? It's been over 20 years. Winning bronze, which is FIBA World Cup, is the highest achievement for the program. Is even more, and I think if we really go further down and maybe go into the intangibles, I think what the program has achieved beyond meddling beyond the Olympic slot and guarantee in Paris is I think there is some sort of continuity, both in terms of coaching and style of program that and vision that has been established. I think Rowan Barrett, I think the team, I think Jordi Fernandez, and the players now have a sense of, okay, what can this program potentially be, not for next year, not 2024 in Paris, but for the next 10 years. I really think if you want to build intergenerational program that can compete at a high level, not just with the Americans, and I'll get to that later, but with the Spains, with the Serbian teams, and the Lithuanian teams of the world, with the Argentinian teams of the world, you're having to think, essentially like a program, and just for the sake of comparison, I'm going to use football, for example, and how the national teams in football or soccer for many North American audiences refer to it, how they think. You know, they're not just thinking, okay, what is this next World Cup going to look like? No, they're thinking about, you know, what is our youth program looking like in order for them to compete in 10, 15, 20 years, right? What's the style of play that's going to be anchor our national this national sport? And so in our case, you know, what style of play in terms of basketball is going to allow our youth programs to grow into, and that when they become adults and play on a professional level and play for the national team, that they're going to also maintain. So that's quite important. I think we're getting there. I don't think we've ever had a signature Canadian basketball style, and I think that's coming with this crop, with this generation. That's exciting, and that's quite important, right? I don't think we even had that when we had the Steve Nash generation in the late 90s, early 2000s, and so that's probably getting my juices going. And I think it's been covered already. You know, Dylan Brooks. I think for me, the image I had for him was the Sam Cassell GIF. You know, from the 90s, right? He probably ascended to a level of maturity as an athlete and as a young professional. Really learning from his exit from the Memphis Grizzlies, and now improving his game and understanding his role as a leader on this team, not just as a player, but as a representative of the program. And he and Shea and RJ and I would also add Jamal Murray. I know he had he participated in the training camp and the preliminary stages of the program, but I really feel that his presence is still there, and I think he's a huge supporter. And I know for health reasons he decided to step back, given his long run in the playoffs. But I think Dylan really showed his value. Again, to the program, but also as a pro, to the point where, yes, I know he feels like he has a reputation to defend. My dude has been paid. I don't think he needs to prove anyone anything. And I'm looking forward to his continued success and riding the success into this new season with the Houston Rockets. But I think there's the crescendo, really, of a performance against the U.S. and of putting on a essentially 40-point game and playing incredible defense and really having a leadership presence at the bronze medal game. And Shea, I think, has proven that he is the first team All-NBA player that he is and has so much more room to grow. There's one thing that you can do in terms of dominating in the NBA and then also dominating in FIBA basketball, in international basketball. Some players cannot do that, right? And we know those names in the NBA. It's a challenge. The international game is very, very different than the NBA game. And that's not just for the players. Certain NBA coaches can coach in the NBA, or college coaches, American college coaches can coach incredibly well at the NCAA level, and meet obstacles when it comes to the international game. Granted, they're played differently. You know, there's different rules, there's different types of configurations. And so for me to see Shea just be magical on the court is a testament to his hard work. It's a testament to his smarts. There are things that I saw that I, you know, kind of confirmed that he is on a trajectory of greatness. And I know there's debates now having on air that whether he's is he the best Canadian basketball player to ever live. And I think to crown him those accolades is a little too early. I think Steve Nash continues to wear the crown insofar as he's, an MVP, award winner, back to back, just for the record. And he also was part of that kind of early stage, kind of preliminary shift in the NBA, right? The 7-second offense, made famous with the D'Antoni and the Phoenix Suns. Steve Nash was a part of that, right? And we really saw that, it evolve to its nadir with the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry. But Steve Nash really has an imprint in the NBA and in Canada basketball that can't be replaced or easily be toppled by what Shea has done just, recently. And I think Shea still has a lot more room to make a dent in the NBA, and most likely will. And we wish him all the best. But let's not just jump to these easy comparison discussions, and let's just appreciate the current achievements that we've been able to witness. And that has been, there's just video evidence of that greatness, one. And two, I think there's also the demeanor, the leadership that he's been able to display, similar to Dylan, but very differently, that fits his own personality. I think there's also the style of play that he's been able to weave between the NBA as well as the international game quite smoothly. I think there's not a lot of ball handlers that can do that. I mean, Luka is one, I think, because he's been schooled in the European game. And the Ginobili is another player that comes to mind, who was able to kind of put one foot in the NBA as well as in an international game. But there's not a lot of ball handlers, creators that can do that. It's quite difficult. You see different types of defensive schemes in the international game, a different level of physique as well. A physical play, and you also have a different whistle that may have frustrated even a lot of viewers. But that's just the reality of the international game. FIBA officials, call the game differently, and it was great to see Shea adjust to all of the facets. And I think we're just getting started to see this, the prowess that this young man has to offer. I think 23 or 24 years young, but you know, but his mind is older. I shout out to Mobb Deep. This guy is incredibly savvy, and I think the biggest takeaway for me as a basketball purist is the cerebralness of his game. And again, I think there's a long essay, you know, being written about him and his game, and whether they be the Zach Lowe's or the Oren or Blake Murphy's of the world. I think it's just wonderful to see him get his flowers and the spotlight to be shone on him. And so greater works to come for this brother, because him donning the Canadian jersey is just making, you know, it sets the tone for at least even in the upcoming generation to see that, you know, you can grow up in the streets of Hamilton and do quite well for yourself. And even on top of that, let me just go further. The character that he carries himself with, that's also something to be admired and exemplified. This is exciting times. So let's talk about, one more point. I don't think we get this far without Jordy Fernandez. I mentioned in earlier recordings, probably back in late spring, that he was my choice for the replacement for Nick Nurse for the Toronto Raptors. I was wrong. Right. But fate will have it, you know, he was the replacement for Nick Nurse on the Canadian national men's team. You know, it's and we don't get this far as a program without Jordy Fernandez. I think luck really will have it, or maybe fate, you know, providence, that, you know, Nick Nurse leaves, Jordy Fernandez comes over and makes certain tweaks, and we not just get the bronze medal, but we grow the program. We grow the program in a sophisticated way where we actually have credibility on the global stage. And this is, again, just the beginning. So I'm really looking forward to what Jordy Fernandez has in store for us. Because it's very difficult to inherit a program this late and be given a couple of months to put a team together and to draft schemes in preparation for what I think was a very difficult trek and tourney. You're having to play some of the best teams in the world. You're playing Serbia, you're playing Spain, you're playing Brazil. Not easy whatsoever. You're playing the United States. And these guys, in terms of Jordy, as well as the coaching staff, did an amazing job. And you're also coaching against experience coaching staffs all together, you know, as well. You're scheming against some illustrious records that are on the opposite end, and to have such a short period of time. I mean, Jordy was an assistant coach with the Sacramento Kings, who were in the playoffs. During that time, he was interviewing for the Toronto Raptors job that he didn't end up getting. A few weeks later, he was selected for the national men's basketball team's coaching gig. Kind of preparing for the FIBA World Cup in a matter of weeks. I can't imagine what his summer was like. And during the press conference, he actually thanked his family, his wife specifically. I don't know what your level of discipline is, and I don't know what your bandwidth is, but you coached a hell of a summer. Last year, I would say the last 12 months with the Sacramento Kings, and ensuingly with the Canadian national men's team. It's incredible. We don't get this far without Jordy. Jordy and his family should be getting honorary visas, man. Like, you don't have to show your pat. You should just walk in through the border, bro. Like, I'm serious. I think we can work that out. It's not easy to stumble on a great coach that has the potential to form a program, not just for a summer or there's ensuing summer, referring to the Olympics in Paris, but to really design the potential to design our program for the foreseeable future. My hopes is that he stays on, I'm sure he's going to secure a head coaching job in the NBA soon. But I think he's also an example of the direction that the game is going, right? Like, it's and no offense to Nick Nurse. I think he's a great coach in his own right. But we didn't successfully actualize our objectives, right? We didn't qualify with Nick Nurse in the previous opportunities that were given to us. And I think Jordy coming in provided that international, he's also Spanish. He's from Barcelona. So he was schooled in the Spanish basketball, approach, methodology. And we benefited from that. And that allows me to pivot in the direction that I believe basketball has been going in the last several years. Some would say the last couple of decades, but I think we're really seeing it in the last, I would say, 5 to 6 years, on the main stage, really, in the NBA. And let's just say that there's two types of fans. I can attest to that. I think there's basketball fans. I think there's basketball purists. And then there's NBA fans. And I don't think there's one's better than the other. But, I think I heard in ESPN's Tim McMahon say that he prefers the NBA, the basketball that's played in the NBA for aesthetic purposes, right? Like, I understand that the 3-point line is extended. There's certain rules that make it a lot more challenging, for and accommodating to certain athletes. So, for example, big men, your big man can't stay in the paint for more than 3 seconds, for example, whereas in the FIBA rules, will allow it. But to each his own, there's basketball fans who would follow the game if it's being played on a street corner, by a bunch of no names, and they'll analyze the hell out of that game just because they appreciate the sport. Right. Whereas there's some who won't watch a game of basketball unless it's being played by professional athletes, on American soil, right? So I understand that. Nevertheless, I think FIBA's this tournament, I think this World Cup showed and maybe stamped and confirmed several things, several truths. If you're in denial of the fact that the game has outgrew itself beyond the Chicago's, the LA's, the New York City's, then continue to live under your rock, because the last MVPs in the NBA have all been international, right? With the exception of James Harden, who I believe, you know, who won it several years ago. But you have Giannis, you have Jokic, you have Joel Embiid, who are all foreign-born international players. I know David Thorpe of True Hoop has advocated that Joel Embiid essentially is, you know, kind of has been schooled in the American, kind of factory of basketball, right? He's American made in a sense. So, so the U.S. can claim Joel Embiid. And I think there's a lot of debates on whether he should be naturalized as an American so he can join the U.S. national team, which is a debate we can have at another time. But I think what we can appreciate is the country of origin. So country of origin, in this case, Joel Embiid being Cameroonian. But it's fascinating, right? Because you then have to ask yourself that, and even the, top players in the league right now, we're looking at, Luka Doncic, who is Slovenian and played professionally in Spain for most of his life before coming into the NBA, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, right? Canadian born. And so the way the game is being grown in different parts of the world is exciting, and it actually benefits the NBA. It benefits the NBA because it allows for a wider range of talent, one, to come through. But also, I don't think it just stops at the players' level. I think it also continues and flows at the coaching level. I just mentioned Jordy Fernandez, but the Toronto Raptors also just hired Darko, and who's from a country who finished second, by the way, in the FIBA tournament, and a country that has the reigning MVP, the reigning Finals MVP, but also has an illustrious history with the sport that goes beyond and before the 92 kind of mark, where a lot of Americans feel like the U.S. really impacted the game internationally with the Dream Team, but Serbia is a country that's been playing the sport for almost a century now. I mean, dating back to like the 1920s. So and similar to the Lithuanias of the world that have historied basketball narratives, and so it's exciting to see the sport really get the sport of basketball to get a much more multifaceted and multi-storied celebration, and especially Germany, who's not known for being a basketball country, but being crowned champions, and seeing Dennis Schroeder, who's a German and Gambian descent player who came over to the U.S. I think he was 18, 19, and had, shout outs to him signing with the Toronto Raptors. But for him to be dedicated to the German national team all these years, and finally seeing it be crowned, champions of the world. So it's exciting times, and I think it confirms, the Thomas Friedman, book from years back, The World is Flat, right? Which is the book that, kind of posited that the world is kind of equal opportunity, we're entering a period of equal opportunity in terms of commerce, right? Like there's companies in Singapore or India can compete with companies in Sweden and the U.S., right? And I think for the if the world is flat in that sense, you know, I'm not talking Kyrie Irving, the flat earther theory here, that, you know, we're talking about economics here. Then I think that's the same argument can be made in terms of basketball. And I believe that was always the case. Especially since, you know, one could say since the 80s and since the 80s when international players were starting to kind of come through the ranks into the U.S. And Americans were also playing abroad, particularly in Europe. But I think we finally reached a period where there's a lot more kind of an opportunity for the internet, for the game to reach an international point where talent can be found anywhere in the world. The number one ranked player in the world in the draft, at least, and chosen to the San Antonio Spurs was Wembanyama from France, right? This unicorn. We'll see how he lives up to the hype. But it's exciting to know that, you know, even the narrative around him wasn't one of doubt or, you know, being mystified in the sense like a lot of the media would cover international players a decade ago, right? I think there's open source data. I think there's people who could see footage. But I think there's a lot more of a sensitized American audience that can be open to international players now, right? As fans, mostly fans. I mean, American brands have always coveted international players. I mean, it didn't take them long to, you know, run after the Giannis's and the even Ricky Rubio's back in the day. But I think now fans are really kind of stepping outside of. And we're talking about NBA fans, you know, and pedestrian fans even, appreciating the sport globally. It wasn't that long when, you know, Stephen A. Smith was going beyond himself when New York Knicks selected Porzingis in the lottery, and then he completely did a 180 after he saw Porzingis play in the early parts of the season. So I think he's an exemplar of that change, and so it's interesting, and beyond just interesting, I think it's exciting as a basketball fan to really see the state of the game be celebrated at such a, you know, you know, kind of stage and moment, and for the game to the tournament to even be hosted in Manila, a country that it has a storied history with the sport. Filipinos are the biggest of fans, and ranging from, you know, Warrior fans to Raptor fans to LA fans, and I think it was. Yeah, I think it was just, you know, kind of providence to even have it situated there in Manila, who were great hosts of the tournament. And I think my last point is the changing of narratives, right? I think, you know, Toronto right now is, you know, hosting the Toronto International Film Festival, TIFF. And if you're in the surroundings, check it out. And I think it offers an opportunity for different narratives from around the world, right? I mean, it's, you know, it's not only Hollywood that produces film. You know, you have, you know, production companies in Mumbai, in Reykjavik, in Paris, in Venice, in Lagos, in Joburg, in Mexico City, and I think that's the adjacent or comparison with the with basketball, right? I think, you know, Germany finishes number one, you know, Serbia finishes number two, and Canada finishes number three. You know, the U.S. finishes number four. It doesn't mean that the Americans have less talent, have a terrible team. It's time for them to kind of have this, you know, existential crisis, like they did back in the early 2000s, and had to kind of rebrand themselves with the Redeem Team. No, I actually think it's just a change of narratives. There's a multiplicity of narratives. And I think that we're at a time where the United States, you know, going back to, you know, Thomas Friedman's, you know, kind of the world is flat, you know, kind of theory, more so theory, less of a theory, more so, you know, kind of, you know, summary of the state of the world in this 21st century, that there's the equalization of opportunity, and the Americans will continue to, you know, put out great basketball athletes who are smart, who are ultra athletic, who are hardworking, and who amaze us. But at the same time, there's also going to be the Jokic's of the world, the Giannis's of the world, the Doncic's of the world, the Shays of the world, and that we can also celebrate as well. And I think that's exciting times, right? And I know, you know, I think I was following a few Twitter mentions, and, you know, LeBron James is, you know, getting all amped up and, you know, wanting to, you know, stage some sort of comeback for the U.S. for next year. Similar, you know, I'm not making this direct correlation, but it almost is like, you know, there's a kind of MAGA, Make American Great Again kind of fever coming out, right? Like this ultra nationalistic, you know, the U.S. was completely embarrassed, which is really based on ludicrous, you know, kind of conclusions, and therefore let's amp this kind of campaign of the great return, you know, the U.S. needs to be the city on the hill, you know, kind of Ronald Reagan, you know, on steroids kind of a campaign. And I actually don't think that's, you know, first of all, I don't think LeBron James is anything close to that. But I actually think calmer heads should assess the state of basketball in the U.S., which is one that shouldn't be protectionistic, and rather adopt to the international game. And see where they can improve, and see where they can actually tailor their young basketball athletes in a way that can do two things. One, obviously, achieve a route to the NBA, and, you know, maintain that focus, but also have a greater appreciation of the international game, right? And so two things two truths can stand beside each other, right? The Schopenhauer's cat, the NBA, or, you know, American basketball has contributed greatly to the sport. The 3-point revolution, D'Antoni, you know, that's American made, right? You're still having incredible athletes coming from the woodworks through the U.S. But I think not just at the athlete, you know, just amongst athletes and the rankings of athletes, but also in terms of coaching, I think they would benefit from having a much more international infusion. And that's my opinion. You know, I think there, you know, I'd be curious to know what other writers and talking heads have to say about it. But that is my long-drawn report on the recent FIBA World Cup. Yes, I think I had mentioned that I'm reporting from Lagos, Nigeria. I've recently relocated here for the time being and for the purposes of work and life. And so I will be recording most of my inputs here. I'm hoping that maybe once a month, a couple of months, and or even a live recording with B and Courtney can be made. We're gonna have to work through some of the logistics, but all I can say is that one, I have better internet here in Lagos than I did in Vanier, and two, I think it's interesting to see for me to report about the NBA, the Toronto Raptors, from a different part of the world, right? And I'm hoping to catch a game live with a few viewers here in Lagos and see how people here respond to the game. I know football or soccer is still king here, but you still have basketball followers here, right? Like, you know, and fans so it's exciting times ahead on multiple fronts. So looking forward to joining you again down the road. All right, Zaya Kuyena signing out. Peace. I think I don't do dream, boy, I'm on your passion.